Welcome to the Mid-America Hypnosis Conference. Welcome to my workshop titled, I think it's titled, Experiential Somatic Therapy, which sounds really advanced. These are big words. It sounds like this is going to be something incredible, and it is. Because in the world of psychotherapy right now, all the buzz is somatic therapy. In other words, the body keeps the score. Now, Besser van der Kolk's book, a Dutch guy, titled The Body Keeps the Score, 10 years after it was written, is this week on Amazon, right now as we speak, book number 25. By the way, that's out of 15 million books, and this is a book that was written 10 years ago. People are fascinated by this new idea that the traumas that we've experienced are stored in our bodies, and that our bodies are revealing our traumas, and that the way to solve and to heal our traumas is not to talk about it with our mouth or with our brain, but to feel it and experience it and work through it instead. Now, let me take you back in time, because even though this new concept is storming the world of psychotherapy, let's go to the 1800s. And let's go to Franz Anton Mesmer. Right? You know, he thought he was moving magnetic fluid. It turns out there wasn't magnetic fluid. But what was he doing? He was doing body work. Okay? Let's go to Jean-Paul Charcot, 1800s, the Nancy School of Hypnosis. What was Charcot doing? Charcot was doing, well, his clients were standing up rather than laying down because he was different than Mesmer. But he was touching them. He was moving them. He was putting out a performance. He was working with them. He was involving them in the process of everything that he was doing from the very beginning to the end. His clients didn't close their eyes. It was fractionation and rapid induction, yes, even before John Cerbone, speed traps existed, and Charcot is doing it. Hypnosis is the original somatic therapy. Psychotherapy thinks that they've come across this new concept, and the reality is we've been doing this for hundreds of years. I can't think of a better somatic process for helping a person to deal with their stress, their anxiety, their traumas, than what hypnotists are born doing. And when I get on the internet and I talk about the value of progressive muscle relaxation, there's always a guru of pontification on Facebook who will say, "Why PMR? I would never do that. That's just relaxotherapy. Hypnosis isn't relaxation. That's just boring them into hypnosis." And I say, it's a great, if boring people into hypnosis works, use it. The reality is, 1978, Harvard University, what the heck was his name? Herbert Benson, wrote my favorite hypnosis book of all time. He wrote the book, not The Body Keeps the Score, he wrote the book, The Relaxation Response, 1978. Sold 40 million copies, okay? Herbert Benson still is alive. 45 years later, still at Harvard, still doing research, written numerous books on the benefit of relaxation. I love using the progressive muscle relaxation induction. No, it does not impress hypnotists at a hypnosis convention. But my job isn't to impress hypnotists at a hypnosis convention. It's actually to help my clients to change, to experience something different. And I love to use Jacobson's protocol, 1928 Edmund Jacobson's protocol, 16 muscle groups, and he taught what hypnotists no longer use because we're afraid we're boring them into hypnosis and we want to get it done quicker. By the way, my theory is if you do the induction correctly, it's not so, a lot of hypnotists think we got to get through the induction quickly so we can get to the good stuff. If you do the induction correctly, it is the good stuff. So Jacobson taught us active progressive muscle relaxation. Most hypnotists use passive progressive muscle relaxation. Passive progressive muscle relaxation is this. As you close your eyes down, notice the feeling of the muscles in the eyes and let them relax. Unclench the jaw and relax the muscles in your jaw. Feel that relaxation spreading through your shoulders, through your arms, and even to the little muscles of your fingers. Now extend that relaxation into your belly, back, buttocks, thighs, calves, camels, down into your ankles, eventually to your little tiny toes. Okay, so this is a passive form of progressive muscle relaxation. We're telling somebody who has trauma and doesn't know how to relax to just do it. And then we say as hypnotists, they were hard to get into hypnosis. Well, that's because people don't intuitively know the difference between tension and relaxation, and that's what Jacobson taught. So Jacobson taught this. He taught, well, a version of this. Take your hands and hold them into a fist. Go ahead, do that right now. Hold your hands into a fist and hold that tension. Feel the fingers pressing into the palm of the hands. Feel the tension on the back of the hands. Now relax. Feels pretty good, doesn't it? Right. Go ahead and tense your hands into a fist again and let them relax. And by the way, notice you've doubled the sense of relaxation the second time around without even intentionally trying. And the Jacobson's protocol was not developed so that people become relaxed. The purpose of Jacobson's protocol is to train clients in a skill. And the skill is to notice the difference between tension and relaxation. Because the person who's experienced traumas, microtraumas, stress, or anything else we can throw under this big umbrella of experiences people have, are walking around as a big ball of anxiety, anger, depression, stress, tightly wound, and they don't even know it. I work with depressed clients who, when I tell them they're depressed, they're shocked because they've been depressed for so long, they don't even know they're depressed. The clients who I work with who have anxiety-related problems literally come in my office, or on Zoom because it's 2024, and I notice as they're talking about their problems, they're not breathing because they're not relaxed. They're literally talking for a minute without even taking a breath. The clients who I work with who've experienced trauma are walking around in hypervigilance, waiting for the next thing to either fight, flight, freeze, or follow. By the way, we talk about the fight or flight response. We got a little bit more enlightened now. There's a fight, flight, or the freeze response, the paralysis. We noticed that. Thank you, Besser van der Kolk. I'm going to add a fourth one, the follow response. This is the person who becomes fused to their trauma. This is the person who they follow it, they become a part of it. I mean, you could think Stockholm Syndrome, right? You could think you could think Patty Hearst, right? This is something that happens sometimes when people are faced with trauma. There's a fourth thing that people do. They follow it or they become fused to it and they become part of the problem and perpetuate it. When I worked with sex offenders in a treatment program for the state of Texas, every one of our perpetrators was a victim. That's the follow. And fight, flight, freeze, or follow. So I love teaching these techniques, but as hypnotists, we've been doing somatic therapy from the very beginning. And sometimes when I teach classes, people say, Richard, you're teaching unlicensed people psychotherapy. And most of the time, actually, psychotherapists are teaching Buddhism without ordination. Let's be honest, that's largely what their approach is nowadays. And what I'm teaching you is the original art of hypnosis that psychotherapy is just discovering now is actually highly effective. I hope you went to Mike's talk yesterday. If you didn't, you get to see him this afternoon. He wrote one of my favorite books in this field, A Multi-Channel Eye Movement Integration Techniques. The psychotherapy community is like, ooh, wow, EMDR. Hypnotists were like, watch the pocket watch. Right? These things aren't new. I mean, King Solomon did said it best. There is nothing new under the sun. But I want you to know you should not be afraid to utilize the techniques that psychotherapy has claimed as their own when, in fact, almost every single one of them is rooted squarely in a foundation of meditation or hypnosis, of which I think, by the way, are not two sides of the same coin, but the exact same thing, which just different words, right? So I'm going to be sharing with you some methods of somatic therapy that, yes, if we were at a psychotherapy convention, they might be using today or talking about or teaching about. And I want you to use these confidence with as hypnotists because these aren't within our domain. There's something that's part of our tradition, part of our history, And I hope I can share with you some techniques in a new way that'll make you really excited about it. And the reason you have a paper and pen is because we're going to do something called body mapping. Because I love body mapping. In fact, I hate the damn GPS. I'm always dropping my phone when I'm driving. Remember the old days when you had the big piece of paper and you folded it out, and then you folded it to the part you were driving on and then flipped it over? Do you guys remember doing that? Yeah, so I actually love body mapping because it's something real. It's in front of you. And when my clients take a pen and they draw their own body on a piece of paper, it becomes something very real to them. By the way, when I have clients do something like this, I give them almost all my assignments followed. I give them this post-hypnotic suggestion. When you go home today, that piece of paper you were writing on earlier, you'll tape it to your bathroom mirror. It's the first place you are in the morning, the last place you are at the end of the day, and it will remind you to stay focused on whatever we've been working on. So I love, whether it's on Zoom or whether it's in an office, using techniques like this. All right, so let's get to the heart of what is experiential somatic therapy. Experiential. Hypnosis should be experience. So many new hypnotists learn this. They learn, I'm the hypnotist, you're the client. You close your eyes down. I talk for 45 minutes at you. You don't move because I'm afraid if you move or if you talk or if you open your eyes that somehow you're going to come out of hypnosis. And that's going to be bad for me because you might not think you were hypnotized. And so I, with great nervousness and apprehension on my part, make sure I talk slowly and relaxed and don't stumble over my words and get it perfect so that you're lulled into a almost deep level of sleep. Never asleep, but deeply relaxed. But keeping those damn eyes closed, because in hypnosis, I do all the work. I talk, you shut the hell up. At the end, I say, 1, 2, 3. Open the eyes, wakey wakey, eggs and bakey. How was that experience for you? It was fucking boring. That's what that experience was for him. I don't do that. I'm way too ADD, in case you didn't notice, to do a 45-minute session. Instead, I'm going to do this. I'm going to use what we learned about in Hypnosis 101 certification, but new hypnotists are afraid to do. You experienced hypnotists aren't afraid to do this, but recognize the new people are afraid to do this. Go ahead and close your eyes down. And with your eyes closed down, take in a deep breath. As you take in a deep breath, I'm not going to do a good job of hypnosis here. This is just a demonstration. But as you relax here in the chair, go ahead and unclench your arms, unclench your legs, whatever the word is, and focus yourself. Now go ahead and open your eyes, open your eyes. Are we able to do that? Do you sense that you're focused? Awesome. Go ahead. Close your eyes down again. And with your eyes closed down, pay attention to the feeling of warmth in your solar plexus. This is right underneath your sternum, right above your belly button. This is what, in personal training, we call the core. In metaphysics, we call this the I think this is the fourth chakra, or the fifth chakra, third, whatever. It doesn't matter. If you get the number right, they're still going to get hypnotized. Right? It doesn't really matter. As long as they're focused, because Yapko did say something really intelligent. Michael Yapko wrote the book Transwork that we've all read, and that is that if you were going to reduce hypnosis down into one word, what would it be? It would be absorption. So if you said on your 11th chakra, right below the belly button and above, they're going to still be absorbed into that experience. Now go ahead and open your eyes. Were you able to sense the feeling of light and energy in this in the center of your body? Pretty amazing, isn't it? All right, go ahead, close your eyes down again. I open and close their eyes. I talk to them throughout the whole session. I might be doing my session, pre-talk, induction, deepener. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Go there now. Now go ahead and open your eyes, and you'll notice you have a digital notepad in your hand, along with a digital pen. That's pretty cool. Now go ahead and draw a picture of a gingerbread man or a stick figure. I'm like, he's in the middle of a hypnosis session. I've done the induction. I've done the deepener. I even gave him an awesome metaphor, parable, story, or other indirect suggestion, drawing on my deep Ericksonian techniques. Then I had him open his eyes and draw a picture. May I hold this up for just a moment? Look at that. Perfect directions, even with a lousy hypnosis session, right? I want my clients doing something during the session. So now that we've drawn that picture, go ahead and close your eyes down. And as you pay attention to what you drew on the image, because I'm going to have them draw something on the image, okay? No, don't, just him, right? I mean, if you want to, but you'll be ahead of the class if you do that. All right. So I've done something experiential with it. Now I'm going back to regular hypnosis. 3, 2, 1, 0. Continue to relax. Each breath, breathing in, breathing out, noticing the heart rate becoming smooth and rhythmic, the breath calm and regular. Sometimes people are like, is it the heart rate that's calm and regular, or is it the breath that's smooth and rhythmic, or is it the reverse? It doesn't matter, right? The client will always attach the meaning that they think is important to them to whatever you say, which gives me great satisfaction as a hypnotist, because I no longer have to worry if I'm doing a good job, because once they've paid me and committed to the process, they're going to get what they came for, even if I'm no good. Have you guys ever met a hypnotist? You're like, that person's got to be a lousy hypnotist. And they might be, but their clients seem to get better and like them anyway. There's two reasons why. Reason number one, technique actually doesn't matter. What matters is, do you care about your clients? Do you communicate that to them? And do your clients feel that you're there with them? Because the relationship is everything. The second thing is, why else do clients get well when they have a lousy hypnotist? They get well because they've made a decision to make a change. They've chosen hypnosis as the ritual to mark that change. And so if you say something or do something stupid, right, they are going to attach the meaning to whatever you said or did in a way that's meaningful to them, so that they can accomplish what they came there for. And they're going to say thank you, which is really great to me, because I'm always screwing up my words. There's a video of me on YouTube. It's got 1.5 million views. 1.5 million people have watched this. It's a lot of people to watch one video. And here's what I do in the video. I say this. And as I count from 1 to 3, 1, taking in a deep breath, feeling that breath as it goes deep into the lungs, turning around like a swimmer in an Olympic swimming pool and exhaling. 2, paying attention to the chair below you, the air in the room around you. 1, right? I screwed up counting to 3. In a video 1.5 million people have watched, right? And every now and then somebody will write, and obviously they're joking because they're freaking typing on YouTube, hey dude, I'm stuck in hypnosis forever, you never got to 3. Man, wouldn't it be awesome to be stuck in hypnosis forever? Yeah. I mean, like, Office Space was a fantasy movie for me. That was not a comedy. I was like, oh, the hypnotist dies, you get stuck forever in eternal bliss of a hypnotic resource state. It's a great, great idea. So whatever you say, your client will attach the meaning that's important to them, right? And they'll come up with crazy stuff. They'll be like, he never got to 3. What that means is I get to take this home with me forever, just like Office Space. Right? Or if you say the wrong thing, I mean, like, literally you could say something completely wrong, right? You could, Michael, I don't know, let's say you have a Nike shirt on, let's say you're there for golf hypnosis, right? Let's just pretend he's there for golf hypnosis, because that's a golf shirt, not a basketball shirt, right? So I'm like, go ahead and close your eyes down. And as I hypnotize you, imagine yourself on the center line of the 9th green at Thorngate Country Club. You're just about to make your putt when you notice the defense on the outside of the green, the fringe, is closing in tight. And so you know that you're going to take that putter and go in for a layup, watching that in your mind's eye, making a basket right there, an eagle on the 9th hole. All right, so let's just say, because you don't need to know anything about sports to do sports hypnosis. A lot of people don't do sports hypnosis because they're afraid. I'm not very athletic. Look, I played clarinet at Stevenson High School. In the high school marching band, Richard played clarinet. Oh, by the way, I also played the flute. There were like 3 years. It was cool because of Jethro Tull. But look, I don't know anything about sports, and I have people come to me for sports hypnosis, and I'm liable to say something really stupid like that in my golf hypnosis session, right? Obviously, for those who are as stupid about sports as I am, that was golf and basketball mixed together, right? So you could do this, and what the client's going to be thinking in his mind is, wow, this guy is the greatest hypnotist ever. He's not going to be thinking he mixed up golf and basketball. He's going to be saying, what he's trying to do is help me to draw in from my knowledge of the bulls into my golf game the techniques that professional athletes use to win the Stanley Cup at the end of the NBA season into my session. And, man, I never thought about, like, that putt being a layup, but I can do it. That's exactly what he's going to think. So you can't screw anything up. It's always going to work out. That's the nice thing about it. All right, what are we going to do? Techniques of experiential therapy. We're going to do things with our client. Open, close the eyes. Stand up. Move around. Do all these things. Active sessions. That's why Charcot was popular. He put on a show. And Scott Sandler, most of you know who Scott is. Scott, when he was working in the dental clinic, never had a hypnosis chair, a hypnotist chair, right? His client was in the dental chair. Scott walked around. Never once did he sit down. Walked around. In every single session that he did, he was active, and he let his clients be active. Pretty cool. So we want to be experiential. Somatic, though, has to do with the body. And how many of you have read Bessel van der Kolk's book? So it's number 25 on the list, The Body Keeps the Score. The theory of this is that trauma is an injury. Look, I'm going to save you $15 on a book. Trauma is an injury. A trauma is no different than in the morning waking up in your hotel and stubbing your foot and going, oh, my toe, it hurts all day long because I stubbed it in the middle of the night because I didn't know there was an ottoman in the hotel room because I don't have one in my house, right? Trauma is an injury. And how many of you, looking at the average age of people in this room, have injured yourself and still feel that pain years later? Right? I was in a car accident, minor car accident, fender bender. I looked left, I looked right, the car in front of me stopped. I rear-ended it, rotator cuff injury. 20 years later, I can feel it when I sleep. Right? So the injuries we have can cause pain, complications, difficulty many years later. And trauma is no different than an injury. It's no different than stubbing your toe or hurting your rotator cuff or breaking a leg. And this isn't just some sort of metaphor. We can look at an fMRI, we can look at the image of the brain, and we can actually see the damage to the brain caused by trauma, by ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, by post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, you probably work with clients who say, hey, I have this habit or I have this problem. Hypnotists are really, now that we don't have any smokers to work with, right? How many of you have noticed the world's not smoking anymore, right? We got vapors to deal with, but, you know, not nearly as many smokers as we used to have. So hypnotists have been saying, well, I need to learn about chronic pain. Because all of the research-based approaches to hypnosis, pain control is number one with the most efficacy, according to the peer-reviewed literature, right? But that pain your clients have isn't because they stubbed their toe or broke their leg. It's because they were beaten, abused, neglected, harmed, hurt, gaslighted, narcissisted, and whatever else. Both by caregivers, if you're interested in attachment disorders, as well as situational traumas, ranging from auto accidents to tornadoes to hurricanes to acts of war to terrorism to whatever. And sometimes those physical traumas were caused by experiences in the adult world. And sometimes we're victims of the other adults in the world around us. Anyone here ever been in an abusive, exploitive, gaslighting, narcissistic? I didn't even have finished the question. They're like, yeah, I've been there, right? Those relationships in the adult world, those traumas people carry in from their third, fourth, fifth abusive relationship, but they think it's their fault, right? because, well, they're an adult. They should have known better, right? And all of these traumas, they build up in our physical experience. And when you work with pain control, it's called, in hypnosis, we're the witch doctor. We're the last person people go to. So this is called functional pain. That's what medicine calls it. Well, look, you know, she keeps coming in with this foot pain. It's functional pain. We looked at it. There's an x-ray. There's nothing there, right? It's pain without a cause. The pain is real, okay? And maybe it was caused by something. Maybe there was a break or whatever else. But why did this person... pain lingers and this person's pain didn't? The trauma. Every one of your clients who comes in with physical symptoms, I hypnotize all the time. I help people with fibromyalgia. I hope you're doing somatic work, because the easiest way to help somebody with fibromyalgia is not to give them counters to their cognitive errors and direct suggestions for 45 minutes. It's to let them hold their hand on their belly and their forehead, and to breathe and be present with themselves. Right? It's to put their hand on their heart for the first time, to become aware of their own heartbeat and the way it feels. As the heart beats under the sternum, and as the pulse under the fingertips becomes one synchronization of the heart that goes throughout the body. So how do we bring somatic techniques into hypnosis? Let me share with you some. Would you like that? Go ahead, close your eyes down. Richard's hypnotizing you. Because it's an only 50-minute class, I'm not going to do a big, long hypnosis session. I'm just going to get right to the point. So you all know exactly what hypnosis feels like, what that resource state is of hypnosis to you. And so bring yourself to that resource state right now. Pay attention to your breath. If you have anything in your lap, you might set it on the chair next to you. Imagine I've done an incredible induction. The world's greatest deepener. They gave you the hypnotic command. It's in this resource state that you've created right here, right now, that we can move forward and begin to accomplish that's what is most important to you. And so as you pay attention to your breath, breathing in, breathing out, noticing that without even trying, the breath becomes smooth and rhythmic, and paying attention to the chair below you and your feet on the floor, this is called grounding. You can set aside the regrets of yesterday and the fears of tomorrow and be fully present in this moment. And now notice movement in your body. Notice the ability where you sit right now to simply sway from left to right. Go ahead and adjust your body in a way so that you can move like a tree on a spring day in a light breeze. Simply moving your body left to right, left to right. And continue that movement, allowing your body to feel a sense of movement. And in this room, in this group, several of you are moving and allowing yourself to express and to feel that feeling of movement left to right, left to right. And some of you need a stronger breeze. And so here it is now, beginning to allow yourself the freedom to move from left to right, to left to right, left to right. And notice how wonderful it feels to find the rhythm of your own body, the rate at which the movement feels best to you. And notice how wonderful it feels after, assuming this is some type of trauma session, a life of collecting ACEs, to begin to allow yourself the freedom to move without the constraints of the traumas of yesterday. Now imagine that breeze stilling and your body stilling. And with your body still, take in the next breath. Letting that breath begin to bring energy to every part of the body. And as you scan your body, notice, ask yourself, is there a part of my body right now that has a sensation that I can become aware of? Maybe the sensation is the stress of travel, an injury from the past. Maybe it's a sensation of comfort. You notice that where you hurt before, just a little bit of loosening has allowed that part to feel better. Maybe you notice a sweat or a coldness. But pay attention to your whole body. Scan your whole body and simply bring your attention to a part of the body that you're aware of that you can pay attention to. And with your right hand, place your right hand on that part of the body. Just touch that part of the body wherever it is. And take your other hand and place it on your heart. It might be twisted like a pretzel. That's okay. They're delicious. But as you pay attention to your heartbeat underneath your one hand and the part of your body that has a sensation, an awareness, an experience, you can notice the connection. And allow your body to guide healing to that place that has felt trauma or difficulty or stress. Or with the next breath, you can send confirmation and security to that part of your body that has healed and feels good and is comfortable. And now with the next breath in, breathe in. Let a smile come on your face. Allow yourself to feel a sense of energy because you just put oxygen into your lungs and into every cell of the body with that breath. And open your eyes. Open your eyes. And by the way, we learned from Milton Erickson, it's okay to have them open their eyes if they're still touching a part of their body. Remember Milton Erickson did that? Right? Arm levitation. You do the whole damn session with their hand on their face and have them open their eyes at the end of the session. They'd be surprised the hand was on their face. Right, so you don't have to get people back in a special magic hypnosis position in order to have them reoriented. Again, this was just a short experience, but notice we brought movement into a hypnosis session, and swaying is one of my favorite ways to do it. Here's why swaying is one of my favorite ways to do this. This is also why I wish this was an all-day workshop instead of a 50-minute workshop. What we just did when you were swaying left to right. By the way, did that feel good? Felt pretty good. When you were swaying left to right, left to right, left to right, what you were doing is you were practicing a concept in somatic therapy called pendulation. Pendulation is the idea that we can move between that which is traumatic and that which is, I think the opposite of trauma is acceptance. Acceptance, by the way, doesn't mean we like something, endorse something, we hope it happens to somebody else, we're grateful for our miserable, shitty experiences. That's not what acceptance means. Acceptance means instead that I can simply put that shit out on the table, I can acknowledge that its presence, I can be with it, but I don't have to be it. The fusion no longer exists. There's some space between me and my traumas. And this is why I do love mindfulness-based techniques, because mindfulness therapy is how we train a person. It's a skill, just like progressive muscle relaxation is a skill, to put some space between us and our traumas. So what I want to do here with my clients is I want them to move between trauma and acceptance. Trauma and acceptance. With my pain control clients, I want them to move between discomfort and comfort. Discomfort and comfort. This is pendulation. I want my client to move between insecurity and security. Insecurity and security. I want my clients to move between depression and joy. Between depression and joy. By the way, I don't want to make my depressed clients undepressed. You know why I don't want to make my clients undepressed? It's not because of what Cartman said on South Park. A lot of people attribute this to Cartman on South Park, but it actually came from John Bradshaw in Houston in 1991. We want our clients to be human beings, not human doings. And sometimes life is depressing, and I don't want to take depression from my clients so that they're not a human being any longer. Depression is a resource. I've spent a lot of time in my life depressed. That's me. Have I ever been depressed? Yep, there you go. Okay. So depression, it lets me know, Richard, slow down. It says, Richard, take a break. Richard, go to sleep. Richard, spend time doing something that is meaningful rather than something busy. Right? Depression, anger. Anyone here ever been angry or just me? Okay, you and me? Okay, the two of us. Anyone else ever see an angry person, though? What is that? You know, in well, Scott knows this because you're a minister. Grief and loss. Kubler-Ross is five stages, right? We have our shock. No, that couldn't have happened. Then our denial, right? You know, and then we have anger. Anger is essential. Anger does something for the person during grief and loss. Anger, I don't know how many of you have ever had to buy a funeral that you weren't planning on buying. I mean, there's the whole pre-plan thing when you know it's coming, but a lot of times it's pretty surprising. They just show up dead. And now you have the responsibility to do all these things. You have 3 freaking days to get it all done, or 4 days max to get it all done. And if you're Jewish, you got 24 freaking hours to get it done, or Muslim. I mean, this stuff has to be done quick. And there's a lot that needs to be done. And these, whether it's church ladies or synagogue ladies or temple ladies or whoever they are, come over with all this Tupperware full of food for you and you're grateful. But you know if you don't get them back the right dish, they're going to hate you. So you have to be a quartermaster. You have to do inventory. You have to do all this stuff. You have to buy a casket. That's a weird freaking experience. I mean, you have to do all these things. And that anger gives people the energy to get through what really sucks. Without that anger, they couldn't do it. So I want to teach my clients to pendulate, not to be without. I want my clients to feel the whole range of human emotions when it's a resource state for them. And I'm going to teach them experientially to move in my therapy session so that they can learn to move at the funeral home. So they can begin to move when they're before the judge in their court case. So that they can begin to move when their relationship disintegrates. So that they can begin to move when they have to deal with the trauma of recognizing that despite their best efforts, they passed along to their children the same traumas that they were given. How many parents can relate to that? Absolutely. Because we know from genograms, the families tend to repeat themselves. Now, titration is another idea in somatic therapy. Our clients will sometimes come to us. Have you ever had a client do this in the first session? They just word vomit all of their trauma. They're so happy to be somewhere that they can finally be in a place where they know they're going to get answers. So it's the first 5 minutes of the first session with a new client. And they're like, oh my gosh, I don't even know where to begin. Should I begin when Uncle Joe was diddling me, or should I begin where I was traumatized by the abusive first grade teacher who made me insecure for the rest of my life, or should I begin with my parents who were alcoholics, my father who was, they come and dump like big stuff in that first 5 minutes. It's okay. What they want here is they don't want answers in 5 minutes. What they want is they want to know that you can hear. They're testing you. Can you hear anything without raising your eyebrows? And when you, in a non-judgmental, empathetic way, simply communicate to them, I am with you, now you can move into titration, where we say to the client, the traumas that you're talking about are all devastating. That's empathy, right? By the way, I wouldn't say I understand, because I too was a traumatized person. Maybe you were. That's for your own therapy session. So these traumas are really important to you, and we're going to address them. But right now, just close your eyes and be present. Feel your feet in the room around you. How many of you know this grounding exercise from Betty Erickson? Pay attention to 5 things you can see. What are they? Light, exit sign, eraser, telephone, computer, Claudia, Canadian, hippie, Chinese lady, Unitarian, right? Yeah, 5 things you can see. Pay attention to 5 things you can hear. What can you hear? Right? By the way, that's an example of another screw up. It's not 5 things you can see. It's 4 things you can hear, right? Well, I hear air conditioner. I hear Richard breathing because he's got allergies, right? I hear the I hear people in the room around me, right? What else do I hear? I hear the sound of carpet under tennis shoes, right? Pay attention to four things that you hear. It's a grounding exercise, right? Pay attention to three things that you can feel. I can feel the fabric of my jeans underneath my fingertips. I can feel my bony ass on this uncomfortable plastic chair. I can feel the hot air in the un-air-conditioned room, right? I can feel the weight of my trauma crushing my spirit. Okay, what can you feel? Two things you can smell. I smell 1980s musty Doubletree. It's a unique scent. It's both familiar and obnoxious. Okay. I smell cinnamon rolls. Are they cooking cinnamon rolls back in the kitchen? That's just amazing. Right? You know what? You didn't notice you were smelling anything until you stopped to notice. That's why it's a grounding exercise. My favorite one is this. Pay attention to one thing you can taste. You didn't know you could taste anything right now because nobody's eating, but go ahead and taste. Is it onions from the drive-thru at the McDonald's? Because you had that steak bagel thing they got going on with the onions on it? Is it toothpaste? Is it cigarette that you hid before you came in because you don't want somebody to know you're a hypnotist who smokes? You see them like way on the side of the building. Is it last night's sleep residue? Because you're like me and you can't breathe through your nose? So you're a mouth breather all night long. Those of you who do that know exactly what I'm talking about. It takes to like 11 o'clock for that layer to get out. Can you taste something right now? Right? So this is a grounding exercise. So I want to use grounding exercises with my clients to bring them into this moment. Right? With my clients in the trauma, I want to titrate them, to bring them into it, to slow them down, to stop them. Let them go at a comfortable pace into this. All right, so why did I give you a piece of paper? Because body mapping is one of my favorite things. So draw a, oh, here's the drawing my client drew. I don't know if you can really see this because it's on a little tiny laptop. Like I said, the only time I wish that I had a, here you go. I said to my client the other day, like, this is an actual American Express envelope. Right, so I said, you got a piece of paper handy? He said, yes. I said, all right, draw a gingerbread man on there. Yeah, draw a gingerbread man, okay? Or a gingerbread girl if you want to. I mean, or a gingerbread non-binary. I'm okay with that too. Yeah, draw a ginger person. Or just draw a stick figure. Right? If you have no art ability, I don't know if I could draw a gingerbread person, but I can draw a stick figure. So I mean, whatever it is you want to draw, that's fine with me. Don't put anything on it. You don't put them in clothes or anything like that. Like a chalk outline of a body on the sidewalk, because we're in Chicago. Or a gingerbread person if you're in the holiday spirit coming up. Or a stick figure if your art abilities are like me. Draw that on your piece of paper, okay? Everyone's got that on the piece of paper. Awesome. So I'll give you one more minute to draw. Okay, almost everyone got it drawn? All right, great. So we're going to do an exercise called body mapping. This is one of my favorite things to do because what this does is it helps people to, well, they're experiencing something, they're doing something in therapy. When we take our own pen and we write our own answers and our own handwriting, it becomes self-talk. This is a form of self-suggestion and self-hypnosis. It's pretty powerful. But this technique is just super fast, it's super fun, it's super helpful. So go ahead and close your eyes down. With your eyes closed down, put your feet on the floor, pay attention to the ground below you, rest your hands in your lap. You can set that gingerbread person off to the side. And you can just softly close the eyes down, or lower your gaze if you don't want to close your eyes down. Take a deep breath in through your nose, hold it for a moment, and exhale through the mouth. Again, breathe through the nose, Hold that breath for a moment. Exhale. One more time. Hold it. Exhale. Now let your breathing return back to its normal rhythm. You don't have to breathe in any special way here. And bring your awareness to your body. And notice any sensations you feel in the body right now. There's no need to change anything or follow that sensation. Just observe your body. And you can start at the top of your head. You can pay attention to the face, the muscles of the face, the skin, your hair, your eyes. And bring your attention and notice any area of tension or ease. And move down your neck and shoulders. You don't need to try to relax here. This is not a relaxation session. This is just about noticing the upper body, the chest, the back, the arms, the fingers. As you breathe in, you can notice your heart rate. You can feel your chest rise and fall. And ask yourself, what sensations are present in my body that I haven't paid attention to before? Some of those sensations might be pleasurable. Some of those sensations might be distressing. Pay attention to the belly, the back, the calves, the thighs, the knees. And just acknowledge any sensation that you notice anywhere in your body and ask yourself, where in my body am I feeling the strongest sensation right now? It might be a place of tension or warmth or tingling or emptiness or coolness or heatness or sharpness or dullness. Or maybe even the sensation of no sensation, which is an odd sensation since we usually notice the sensations. It could be anywhere in your shoulders, your stomach, your hands, elsewhere. And once you've identified this part of the body that's experiencing something that you're bringing your attention to, explore that sensation. What does it feel like? Is it heavy? Is it light? Is it moving? Is it still? Is it loud? Is it quiet? Now consider something you've probably never considered before, and that is, what emotion can you associate with that sensation? Without overthinking, what comes to mind? Is it stress, joy, sadness, excitement, anxiety, concentration, any other emotion? And allow yourself to just become aware of this emotion at any level. Acknowledge that emotion with kindness and acceptance, no matter what the emotion is. And when you're ready, open your eyes. Open your eyes. And now that your eyes are open, you have a piece of paper with a gingerbread person in front of you. And with that gingerbread person in front of you, we're going to do the body mapping exercise. With this body mapping exercise, look at the drawing that you drew and put a mark that represents the sensation that you became aware of in that place where you became aware of the sensation. And you might draw with waves or spirals or squares or boxes or a dot or a star or in any way that represents the emotion that you attached to that place that you were aware of. X might mark the spot. Anything is okay here. But to note that place that you were just paying attention to and the emotion that you associated with that place. And now, as you were scanning your body, becoming aware of this place, you probably also became aware of some other places. And on that gingerbread person you have, just mark or denote with any type of a mark. It could be shading. It could be a different color. It could be a dot, a spiral, a star, a box, whatever it is that you can think of to represent two or three of the other areas of your body that you also noticed but you didn't focus on. And mark it in a way that represents your association or your feeling related to that place or that part of the body. Now look at what you've drawn. Look at the you. And ask yourself this question. Now the class is over. Between now and the next class, what is my body map telling me? Where is it leading me? What is it showing me? And the good news is, you don't have to answer the question in the next 6 minutes. You can think about this all day long. And you can follow the map to the resources that are most important to you. And you'll discover that when you take this body map and tape it to your bathroom mirror, and it's the first thing you see in the morning and the last thing you see at night, that it leads you in the direction that's beneficial. The boss is giving me the get out of here, Richard. So you guys have a happy day. Thank you for coming. I hope this was helpful to you.